This is the Mixed Coach Podcast, episode 54. Hey guys, this series of podcasts, as you know from the last few weeks, is basically audio portions of video interviews that we offer to our members at Mixed Coach Member. One of the early interviews that I did was with a friend who, he's now a friend, his name is Ryan Ruff. He's actually a member at Mixed Coach now, but he teaches up in Cedarville, Ohio. And we got a chance, John and I and Nathan Adam, we got a chance to fly up there in an airplane and talk to his class about, you know, whatever they could bring up. And it was pretty cool. Actually, we're probably going to transcribe that and make that available to you in some upcoming podcasts. But his question to me was, how do you pick out a mastering engineer? Which was an awesome question, because it's one of the things that happens when you're a mixer. You automatically think that if you send it to, quote, a mastering engineer, end quote, that it's automatically going to be better. And I think we talked about in this interview that it's not necessarily the case that you just send it to a mastering engineer and it just makes it better. And I talked about how finding a mastering engineer is a lot about building a relationship with someone that you trust. I mean, it would be like saying you're going to create a song and then putting a random musician that you didn't know what their skill level was, and then having to accept what they did because, you know, their part became so intricate to the song that you couldn't take it out. So picking out a mastering engineer is a lot like picking out any other musician on your record. And so we talked about that on this record. I think you'll get a lot out of the interview. I'll talk to you after the interview is done. So enjoy this. Hey, this is Kevin with MixCoach.com. Today on the on a Skype call, I've got a buddy, Ryan Ruff. He owns a studio called Ruff Mix Studios. Check him out. But anyway, he had a couple questions the other day that we talked about, and I wanted to record it because I thought some of the information that we talked about would be helpful to a lot more people. So, Ryan, thank you for agreeing to be videotaped this early in the morning. And go ahead and mention the question that you had, and we'll just try to recap what we talked about on the conversation.
Sure. Well, we had just talked about, from my standpoint, I've been working really hard at becoming a good mix engineer. And a lot of times you will find that you get bands that'll come in and they have quite a bit of talent, but they might not have quite as much money as they would like. And they'll pay for a good mix, and I'll end up doing a good mix for them. But then they don't feel, for some reason or another, that they want to pour much money into the mastering aspect of things. And so what ends up happening is they send it out to get mastered by someone who really shouldn't be mastering, at least at the quality we're trying to go for. And it ends up altering the mix. It makes the mix sound bad. It brings up a lot of the low-level stuff, a lot of the reverbs, and it does some funky stuff to the snare, delays and so on. And so it just kind of makes your mix sound poorly, but yet your name is still on it. And so I was just asking about how that can be avoided.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm starting to remember what we talked about now. I think, and I'll just pretend like, this is the first time that we've had this conversation, but my suggestion to you is, when you're going into, and I think one of the things was a record company that you were mixing for too, that had a mastering guy in place already.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll discuss that a little bit too. But first of all, I would say from the get-go, I would discuss with the band if they want to master, if there's money in the budget for mastering, and if so, who is mastering it. That way, if it's somebody that you really don't want mastering the project, it gives you plenty of time to pave the way to change course for it, either by, not trying to cut somebody out of a job, but if you know that they're gonna kill your mix, then you can either take precautions to, you know, not mix it so hot or whatever. So, so the first thing I would recommend is discuss mastering from the very beginning, because a lot of people just make mastering kind of like an afterthought almost, and like, oh yeah, we got to get this mastered, let's send it to my cousin. And usually the cousin, you know, what I found out is that mastering, really, really good mastering engineers are almost a different breed than you and I. They are guys who know what a DBFS or DBP, I mean, the difference in the kind of DB. See, I only know how loud it is. And that's probably the same thing for you. But there's a lot of, I was talking to a guy from Harrison Consoles the other day, and he was telling me about how you shouldn't go over minus one in your master mix, in the final result, just because of cheaper systems will distort before high-end systems will. I had no idea of that. But he's one of those guys, he's wired differently than I am. And I find that really good mastering engineers are a different breed than we are, so they think differently than we are. And when you hand it off to somebody who wishes they could have mixed it, then it's usually not a good combination. So any of this stuff you need to discuss from the beginning of it. So I would also highly recommend it's like having a default answer for something, like, hey, what system are you going to use to record our project? You almost automatically know which system it's going to be, the Pro Tools, Logic, or whatever. Because that's where you're comfortable, right?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So I would recommend in having the default answer, either say, I have my own mastering engineer, because here's one thing I've noticed. I've noticed that most mixers that I like tend to stick with the same mastering engineer. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. You see the same handful of mix engineers, on many multiple albums that you see whenever you go into any sort of music store. But then you also see a handful of mastering engineers for those mix engineers. So,
well, and I don't think that's coincidence. I don't think that Chris Lordow said, Mastering Lab's mastering my project again. How cool is that? I mean, I'm sure that. At some point, there is maybe a short list of people that Chris or Tom or anybody will even use, because they know that, I wouldn't know what to do with it if I got it, and I'm not a mastering engineer, which is the equivalent of, them picking somebody at the last minute, because I've had it happen to me too. I've had a mixed job that I did that I was pretty proud of, that I had no idea what they did with it after the fact, and they messed it up so bad that I literally thought about, I wonder if they've got the credits done yet so I can get my name taken off of this, because most bands, when they go and pick out a project, don't read who the mastering engineer is. They don't care. All they know is that Ryan Ruff mixed it or Kevin Ward mixed it, and man, this one don't sound like it used to.
Yeah, I had that same experience on actually one of the last projects I did, where I was so excited about the mix and how well everything turned out, and then I got back the master and I thought, oh my gosh, I wonder if I should ask if I should have my name taken off this, because this isn't my mix.
Yeah. Well, so I think that, that happens to all of us, and it will probably happen again, because we don't think about that every time. Just when you think you've got it figured out, they don't. So I can tell you that one of the things you can do when that happens is just bad planning. It's bad planning on our part, because we don't discuss, like I use a guy in New York. I decided I'm trying to think whether I should finish that thought. It's bad planning if we don't have our team put together. We should have a team put together and have guidelines for people who use who like our sound and who want to use what we do. We should have guidelines for them, a checklist, if you will. So my next thought is that a few years ago, I was in the same dilemma that you were. I didn't have a mastering engineer that I could call my own. And there was a guy that I was using in New York City. His name is Alan Silverman at ARF Mastering, which I would highly recommend. He's one of those guys. He's got one Weiss or Vice. He calls it a Vice. I think he probably knows better than it's Weiss EQ and compressor. Each one of those units are over $10,000 a piece. I've been in mastering houses like Masterphonics. I used to use Glenn Meadows a lot. I don't know if you read his name or not, but
a little bit.
He was a really, really good mastering engineer. And I ask that you walk into a room and there's one little desk. And there's two big speakers. No, there's no little speakers. I asked him about the amplifiers that he was powering each speaker with. Each amplifier was $10,000. That, I mean, that, see, that's what I don't have. Anytime you hand your mix off to somebody who's listening on speakers that you listened on, then you really don't have an advantage. You may as well just make it louder yourself, because that's really probably what they're going to do, is just make it louder and make it brighter and make it more, I mean, add more lows to it. Well, you know, that's what you can do. What you really want is somebody that says, yeah, there was a little buildup of 1.2K, and, you know, and I tweaked it at 0.3 dB, and it's like, okay, you were really listening to my mix. Or better yet, for somebody to call and say, hey, Kevin, I noticed that the vocals on this one particular song are not as loud as the rest of them. Do you want me to EQ it, or do you want to send me another mix? See, I think that's, to me, that's worth the price of paying a mastering engineer right there. Somebody that's going to get your back, you know?
Sure.
And chances are that the more inexpensive mastering engineers are just going to try to get it out the door.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, and I know we had talked too about just the fact that sometimes you need to have some sort of backup plan with regards to potentially doing a master yourself and having that as you. Would you like to expound upon that again?
Yeah, let me go back. Let me tell you why I was telling you about Alan first.
Sure.
Several years ago, and I remember where I drifted off the road here. Several years ago, I was mixing a lot of records, and I never knew whether they were being mastered or not. I didn't have a standard answer to give anybody who said, who do you use for mastering? So I thought, I haven't found any mastering engineers that I just love what they did, except Glenn Meadows. I loved what he did. I thought he always made my mixes sound better, and he always made them sound more commercial. So I thought, you know, and the guy at Mastering Lab, the guy who mixes Chris Lord-Alge, I can't think of his name right now. He's a famous mastering engineer. Anyway, he mastered...
Sure.
He mastered one of my projects one time, and it sounded amazing. But those guys are either not doing mastering anymore, or they're too expensive for me to use on a regular basis.
Sure.
Unless I have a bigger budget. So I thought, okay, I'm going to find me a mastering engineer, and I'm going to work with him and let him work with me and help me. I'm going to use him when I have the budget to use him and let him work and make me better. So if I say, yeah, the stuff's too crunchy, it's too loud, I want it to breathe more, I want to be able to tell him that and create this relationship. That's where I'm going with this. It's really important that whatever mastering engineer you use, whether it's your buddy next door or the owner of the record company's cousin or the one of the band members, it's really important that you have a relationship that you can say, you know, this is a jazz song. I don't really want it sounding like, you know, Nine Inch Nails. I want it, I want it to sound, I want it to breathe, and I want the dynamic. I don't want it to look like a brick going across my screen. I want it to have and they won't say, well, just fine then. I mean, they won't get mad and just like completely annihilate your thing. So my point before we move on to the, what I can't remember now, my point is to, if you're going to do this on a regular basis and you're going to be known for your mixing, which I think you do want to be known for your mixing, and I think your mixing is really good, I think that you need to create a relationship with a good mastering engineer so that you'll have that default answer to say, when somebody says, hey, who do you use for mastering? You say, Alan Silverman in New York. He's awesome. And you know, and I can talk to him and maybe get him to cut you a deal if you need for him to work within your budget. But his typical budget is this, and he's well worth it. That's my stock answer.
Sure.
And that usually, because of the credibility and the trust that I hopefully have gained by talking to the people and have taken the project as far as I have, they'll say, well, Kevin has never led us wrong so far. Let's try Alan. And then when they do, they're just like, wow, he's really good and very attentive. So anyway... Now let's move on to the next thing.
Sure.
Do you have any questions about that?
Not about that. I think that makes, you know, perfectly good sense of, you know, finding someone and, you know, building that relationship and making it kind of a long-term thing.
Yeah. The third option, well, I guess the second option, I can't count this early in the morning. the second option, as we mentioned, was a lot of times there's not any budget to master. And what I have been doing lately, And I always should ask, but a lot of times, sometimes I don't have to. I know that there's not enough budget to master.
there's not another $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, $1,400 to do a mastering job. And it comes down to either let somebody who doesn't know how I mix and doesn't know that, you know, I don't mix as bright as everybody else, or I don't want it to sound as crispy and thin like this record does, which I know this mastering guy likes, or this buddy of a buddy likes. It's always good to have your own plan B as far as mastering, as you said a while ago. What I do is I use Isotope Ozone, and I even use it before I send it to Alan, and he doesn't mind it. And I've talked to him about how to use it. I mean, I have called my mastering engineer before and said, Alan, I wish there was money in the budget to, for you to master this, but there's not. What should I do? And he'll say, what have you got? I mean, this was a literal conversation. He said, what do you have? And I said, well, I've got, I'm trying to remember the name of the plugins, the Massey. I've got the Massey plugins. Mm-hmm. And he said, what else you got? And I said, I've got the Waves bundle. He said, what else you got? And I said, Isotope Ozone. He said, that's a no-brainer. Use Isotope Ozone. He said, and here's the benefit of having him on my team. He said, well, I did a shootout for the company or something like that. I actually did some kind of an analysis for the company. And what we found was, you know, and then you start telling me all these dB things, one or half a dB and one-tenth of a dB and all that stuff. And I knew that he knew what he was talking about on that. And he told me kind of how to tweak it up.
Seems pretty helpful to, you know, from what you talked about from before of having a relationship with someone that then you can in turn utilize that relationship for other things, including when you're in a bind like that. It sounds like that, even to that extent, it can be pretty helpful to have that relationship as well.
Well, and I'll tell you another benefit of having that relationship too is Alan is also a producer. I mean, he's one of the rare few that, you know, he's wired on that side of the brain too. He produces Judy Collins, and he's done some things, and he's pitched me some really, really cool things, like a Dolly Parton mix one time, because of that relationship. It's just, this whole thing is about relationships. It all boils down to your willingness to help and, you know, be helped by other people. So,
well, you know, you talk about the word relationship. How exactly, you know, for someone like myself, I think a lot of times when you're just trying to establish yourself and trying to get yourself up and going, make a name for yourself, so to speak, building relationships is kind of difficult. A lot of times people will treat you like, you know, you're a nobody, which you are at that point. You know, you're working your way up. But it's kind of hard to overcome that treatment of, you know, hey, you know, I don't really know you, and, you know, you could be, I call it American Idol syndrome. You could think that you're a really good mix engineer, but, you know, you don't know what you really don't know how bad you are, or whatever. They don't know you, so they might think that, or, you know, whatever, and they kind of blow you off. Or how do you go about building relationships, and not just with, you know, the guy down the street who masters, but some people who you can really trust and who are established in the industry as someone who's kind of a newcomer to the field?
Okay. That's a good question, what you have. And the first thing I can think about, building relationships usually doesn't happen within overnight, for sure. And it usually doesn't even happen within weeks. You seem like a kind of guy who wouldn't have any trouble building relationships. What I did when I first moved to Nashville was that was one of the things that was on my agenda. I was going to try to work as much as I could. And then I just decided up front, I'm not going to work every day. Get over that. You know, I mean, there will come a day when you'll be busier than you are right now, but on the days that you're not working and making money, I wasn't really talking out loud to myself, but I decided this. You were going to be out networking. And that's exactly what I did. Every time I could find a lunch where there was a bunch of musicians and maybe a producer and maybe an engineering friend of mine who didn't mind me hanging out and who didn't think I was going to steal his work or whatever. You know, a busy guy who was like, hey, I need some help. I mean, there are those kind of guys around. I would go and hang out with them. And inevitably, The next few days, I would end up with some session work from that. But it took years to get to where they would trust me to come and hang out. It takes years to build a relationship like that. So my recommendation for you, are you trying to build relationships with bands, or are you trying to build relationships with record companies, or tell me who, and we'll define it a little bit more.
Well, I think from my standpoint, you know, obviously from the business end of things, I'm trying to build some relationships with bands and some, you know, potential producers or companies or whatever, so that there's a influx of clients. But I think also, and maybe as important or even more important, is an attempt at trying to build relationships, like I'm, you know, working on building with you, or other people who are in the industry that I appreciate the work that they do, and I know that can give good advice and can help educate me on, you know, different things. So when it comes to, you know, maybe trying to further my education, you know, I don't necessarily have the ability to, you know, up and go to some recording school or something like that, having already gotten a bachelor's degree, already have a family and all that sort of thing, and can't just drop my job and you know, go get an education. But, you know, maybe be willing to, you know, build a relationship with a really good mix engineer or something like that, where, you know, you can even pay maybe to go down and spend a weekend with them and, you know, watch them do some, you know, work that they're working on. Right. Maybe they help you with some work you're working on, or like you said before, with the mastering engineer, and, you know, building that relationship, not with, like I said, the Joe Schmo mastering engineer down the street, but, you know, a reputable mastering engineer that, you know, when you send it to them, that at the very least, when it comes back, you'll know you got a pro job, and then from there be able to, you know, tweak that and say, hey, you know, just build that relationship like you talked about. Yeah. So,
well, I think a lot of times studio owners and producers and engineers tend to think, how am I going to attract the faceless masses to come and pursue me? And a lot of times that doesn't happen. And a better way to look at it is, probably the bulk of my career, I had two or three, maybe four major clients. And these, when I say clients, I mean people who either produced a lot or had projects being produced, and I established a relationship with them, and I was their only guy, or just about their only guy. And I made a decent living with like four clients. And then the other people that would just come out of the woodwork, I would put in the cracks, which kept me really busy for a long time. So I would recommend to you, instead of saying, how am I going to get enough clients to sustain me, I would be looking at those clients as being either a band that likes to record a lot, maybe a producer, and build a relationship with him. And one of the things you can do on that, well, let me finish that thought. Instead of looking at individual bands and stuff like that, I would start looking also at record companies who have a bunch of bands that you can be their only guy. Or maybe a mastering engineer, you know, that you build a relationship with him, who says, you know what, Ryan has gotten me a lot of work this year. And then when something comes up and they say, hey, can you mix this too? And he says, no, I don't mix. I'm a mastering engineer, but my buddy Ryan Ruff, he does a great job. He's just been sending me work, and I can vouch for his work because I've been mastering it. You see how that goes.
Oh, absolutely.
Then he will toss you some work. That's the same thing that happened with me and Alan. Alan has, I've sent Alan, I mean, I'll point people in his direction all the time because I like what he does to my stuff. And in turn, he likes, you know, what I do too. So when he was producing the Judy Collins thing and they said, who can we get to mix this? They said, I've got a guy in Murfreesboro, Tennessee that can do it. It happened to me another time. I won't go on about that, but that's happened several times. So one thing you can do is when you can't pay somebody for their time, and I have this scenario too, send them work. I mean, that speaks volumes as far as like your commitment to them and their commitment to you. You know, if there's a record company and you have the option of doing this band yourself and making a little extra money or sending them to this record company, think about sending them to the record company. If you think the record company can help, because that's going to reciprocate. That's going to, you know, in a biblical sense, that's like casting your bread upon the water and letting it come back to you, mm-hmm. bigger than you sent it. So if you have the option of doing a band yourself or sending them to a record company that may could do a little bit more than you could, and then you get to mix it, you get to do what you love to do anyway, and then let them handle all the stuff what they love to do, then mm-hmm. do that. So think about establishing relationships with people who, you know, look outside the hand-to-mouth sort of, oh, you've got a band, come in here, let's record a project. And you know they won't record for another 3 years. You know,
right.
Instead of trying to do some of your efforts toward, you know, bigger clients. Like I had Wayne Hahn, who produced like crazy, did orchestrations, went to Europe. I mean, he's one of the reasons that I ended up going to Europe so many times and recording orchestra. And then there was Zane King. He had a record company that he was busy a lot. And I had several more, but one of them was Mike Speck, who was doing a lot of choral stuff. And even though I didn't get to do a lot of the mixing, he had a lot of other engineers that he was comfortable mixing these big choral projects. And I don't know if you've ever done one, but they are a handful. But anyway, how I gained his trust was whenever he would bring me some kind of weird scenario, like this is an actual example, he'd go, this song right here, during the retard section where it goes bloom, blank, doom, 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 bloom, doom, ba. I'd say, yeah. He'd say, well, I want it to be slower. I want it to go bloom, blank, doom, bloom, doom, bloom, doom, blah. And he'd think it was impossible, and I would sit there and work with it, beat detective, all this, you know, other stuff. And
absolutely.
And then I'd do it, and he would be happy with it. And then there would be no choice as to, you know, I'm letting so-and-so mix this, but Kevin has got to work on the mastering. You know, I've let him tune my vocals, and they sound great. I've let him, you know, pocket the choir or whatever. And
right.
And so when you build relationships with those clients, it comes at this cost. You almost have to sacrifice yourself sometimes. Don't think about how much you're making an hour, how much you're making on this particular project, but make it come down to, like, I want to make this right for this client, because this is the kind of guy, maybe you're not, maybe he is, maybe he's not, this is the kind of guy that I need on my team. And then there was a lot of times that I went above and beyond to make it sound exactly like he wanted to, and it came back and helped me in the end, because, I mean, I'm doing a session for him in an hour.
Yeah, I even found that, you know, even if it's not just for that person, but whoever the end listener might be of that project, if you went that extra mile and it's noticeable because it's A, more musical, or B, it's just more put together because you spent the time editing it or whatever, there might be someone out there who says, wow, this guy, who did edit this or who did mix this? And, you know, look at the back because you took that extra time, and, you know, give you a call because, you know, you did an exceptional job on that.
Right.
So,
yeah. Well, I know you probably need to go because it is 15 till. So,
yeah, I can't believe I've never come on Frozen. I'm still.
I know you're still frozen.
I'm still frozen with my mouth open too. Isn't that horrible?
You look like you're deep in thought though, so that's good.
So that was Ryan Ruff. His studio website is called Ruff Mix Studios. He's really, actually, a really good engineer, a really good teacher. Teaches up at, I think it's Cedarville University in Ohio. Anyway, check him out. If you want to hear more interviews like this, actually see interviews like this, and you want to be a part of a great community, a community that Ryan is actually a part of, come check out Mix Coach Member. It's mixcoach.com/member, or you can just go to mixcoachmember.com and end up in the same place. But anyway, hope you like this interview. Let me know what you think about it in the comment section below, and we'll see you next week.